Hello and welcome to another edition. You're listening to Jerry Coonahan. This is 103.2 Dublin City FM. And today, without further ado, I'm going to talk about work, unemployment and the future of work with organisational psychologist Jerry Dixon.
Could you actually give your name and present what you do in the organisational thing?
Sure. My name is Jerry Dixon. I'll go under the title of a work and organisational psychologist. I'll be an executive of the Division of Work and Organisational Psychology for the Psychological Society of Ireland, which is, an umbrella group for a mixture of HR gurus, management gurus, consultants, etc. So we're at the front end of, you know, where the country is at in terms of the current changes.
Now, Jerry, we've got a lot of people without any jobs. Going back to the basics, I'd say to you, could you give me your definition of what a job is, of what work is?
Well, what used to be a case of exchange labour. Once upon a time, you went in, you did hours, you picked up money, went home. We're now seeing quite a distinct change from that. We're looking for people that demonstrate what we call engagement, that have a genuine interest in what a company is trying to achieve and feel almost like personally committed to making that thing work. Once upon a time, there's this case of you just went and did your work, you go home. Now it's more of a case of what we call a community of purpose, that people are working together. It doesn't matter so much nowadays, are you manager or are you worker? There's more this blending. And certainly recruiters are drawing the line. You know, if you're coming across the same interested in the job, you won't get it. But if you're interested in the company and what they're trying to achieve, then they're interested. If you ask any employer, are they actively recruiting? The answer is probably no. If you ask the same employer, would you turn away a good prospect if it, knocked on your door? And the answer would still be no. No job is a charity case. People give you a job simply because they are an investment. And in which case, then, people need to realize, what is their sense of worth? What am I worth to a company? Rather than going to an interview and expecting somehow the employer to somehow know and magically work it out, there's a lovely quote from one researcher who specified that most applications require recruiters to demonstrate magical insight to extract the employable qualities. Employers woken up and realized and said, look, if you know what you're selling, come and tell us what you're selling and we'll listen. But don't just come along in front of us, expect us to do the work. So where, I suppose, the meaning of work has moved is quite simply the case that they want the employee, if you will, to think more like a manager. And equally so, through themes like total quality management, emotional intelligence, this sort of thing, they're wanting managers to think more like employees. So there's a whole cross spectrum now of multi-skill. Okay, and the ultimate realization is that no company sells itself in terms of its products or its services. It's people that make companies work. It's people that make companies adapt, change, survive, and thrive. Products won't do it alone. So it's getting those right kind of people on board who have that sense of drive, have that almost like self-motivation, that intrinsic motivation. It's coming from within. That's what makes things work.
So in other words, we're not talking about, there's my CV, hi, my name is Joe Bloggs. There's my CV, peruse it at your leisure, I'm off, and if you're interested in me, give me a call. Those days are gone.
Definitely, those days are gone. Before you even consider sending in a CV, you would have done your research before even attempting to send it in. In fact, actually, even sending it in won't work, neither. A piece of paper alone is hardly likely to get an employer off his chair. However, talking to employers, visiting employers, researching them and then customizing the CV so they can clearly communicate what you've got matches what they're looking for. Okay. Again, doing it on the basis of dropping in the CV on the basis of following a phone call. I mean, think of applications not in terms of getting your CV in front of an employer. Think of applications more in terms of building a rapport, a relationship with the employer, because that's ultimately what they're buying. I mean, your task at interview is really, when it boils down to it, is to make the employer like you, and like you to the extent they feel trusted enough to want to hire you. That's what the difference now. It's not just an automatic process of exchanging, qualifications, experiences. It's more about who you are as a person now.
Not everybody, in fact, many, many people, exaggerating perhaps somewhat, aren't able to sell themselves, sell their skills, build rapport. Now, don't ask me why. Maybe it's how they were educated or how they were brought up. So I don't see everybody being able to build rapport, sell themselves, tailor their skills for a particular employer.
I'd agree with you most wholeheartedly. They reckon about 20% of the population has no particular, say, career interest. Okay, perhaps their interests lie elsewhere in their hobbies or their families, etc. And that's quite legitimate. But I think there'll always be a market for those kinds of people anyway. I mean, the ESRI statistics from, I think, 2006 to 2011 showed the biggest decrease in unemployment, if you will, was actually on the people with very little qualifications at all. So it's all like, clearly then, we tend to think that it was those people who are at the disadvantage. Not necessarily. Where there has been a significant increase in unemployment is actually female graduates. Their number has gone up quite considerably since 2006. So it's, again, I suppose you've got to step back and say, right, there's several layers to this cake, if you will, and some move, some shrink, some decline. For the people who perhaps, less educated as such, just because someone is less educated doesn't mean to say that they don't have the potential to be educated. Some people may not have thrived in the experience of school. Okay, we talk about multiple intelligences, several ways of sort of like learning to skin a cat. The school system may only focus on a couple of particular aspects of that intelligence. We don't actually reach our academic potential until our late 20s. In which case, then, one thing that did come out of the Celtic Tiger that was a great bonus was this notion of lifelong learning. And for many people who just, brave enough to sort of like bite the bullet, because you think about the fears that, a person in the late 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s faces when thinking, should I go back and do a course? And they get all those echoes and memories of, the experiences they had before. But those who do go through, and it's quite a considerable number, they begin to experience that they do have skills, they do have a level of intelligence, and they can actually play the game. I mean, in my capacity as a lecturer at third level, most of my students would be adult learners, and it's absolutely delightful to see these trembling, nervous wrecks in the first few weeks, and by the time they graduate, standing tall, confident, and knowing what they can do. So even someone without initial education doesn't mean just because you don't have it doesn't mean to say you'd have it permanently. You can acquire education. It's really a case of yet and when. you can actually upskill quite considerably, and in fact employers will probably look at CVs now scrutinizing qualifications on the basis of, right, okay, you may have a degree, but what have you done since then? You may have a leaving cert, but what have you done since then? An employer is more interested in looking at training in terms of, right, I need to train people up, so I'm looking for evidence on your CVs. Can you be trained? Because the question they'll ask for you is, right, okay, it's going to cost us money to train you up in something, but can you apply what you've learned? And that would be the first question you're asked at interview. Okay, you got a certificate, great. What have you done with it? Can you demonstrate to me the way you've used it? How did you apply it in the workforce? That's the real question that they're actually asking.
We spoke about this briefly beforehand. Society's attitude to those who are unemployed, you will get, like in anything human, you're going to get a multiplicity of opinions from those who are unemployed should go out and get a job. Those who are unemployed obviously don't know that there are loads of jobs out there, etc., etc. Does society still judge the unemployed harshly?
To answer your question, it's a massive wide stereotype. When somebody gives out generally, let's say, down the pub type thing about sort of like, oh, I'm being slaughtered in my tax and whatnot, and I'm paying for people who are, claiming the dole, they're not really aiming their grievances at X, Y, and Z people who are unemployed. Because if you say, well, what about so-and-so? He's unemployed. Oh, yeah, but he's okay. So for every single, complaint that someone has, there's a counterexample. So what the stereotype really signifies is a general discontent that, sort of like they're losing so much out of their wages. I think everyone's been bitten by various different forms of taxes. I think what's probably hard is that people find it hard to sort of like rationalise, well, what is this tax for? What is it paying for? All I know is I'm just down 100 quid in my wage packet. Okay, and so we look for a target. It's classic social theory, you know, sort of like you'd look for, you know, the perceived, you know, perpetrator of these events. And it's, so it's easy then to sort of like, you know, cast blame at an unemployed person. The irony is, you could be unemployed tomorrow. I could be unemployed tomorrow. Would I see myself in that bracket? No, I wouldn't. So it's a general stereotype that really symbolises a level of discontent rather than an actual genuine grievance against a particular body of people. Now, saying that, there are some people who have lived the system for quite a long time. And I think probably, you know, government policy would be to sort of like probe those people more deeply. I think everyone wants to work to a large extent, but if, you know, if you give someone an easy option, then possibly some people might take it. Others will say no, because of the meaning of work and I suppose what it contributes towards personal identity, achievement, status amongst other people, in front of the neighbours, the friends, and we're very conscious of that in Ireland, you know, it's all like the reputation of, you know, in front of the neighbours, that we would, you know, given the opportunity and the right kind of work circumstance, we would prefer to go out and work. Whether it's stacking shelves or whether it's sort of like designing web, you know, software systems or helping people, whatever the case may be, we would prefer to be doing something. And you've got to weigh up what is work in terms of it's not just the money in the pocket. It's a whole sense of purpose, identity, achievement. The main part of your self-confidence is born out of feedback and interaction with others that reflects back onto you that I've done something good and that makes me feel good about myself.
Depending on who you ask, we'll always have a need for plenty of workers, from plumbers to pilots to carers to nurses to doctors. The list seems endless. So in the year 2050, there will be plenty of jobs. Except I'm not so sure about that. What with mechanisation, robotisation, further progressive developments in production methods, etc. I just think the question is unemployment on a fairly large scale going to be a fact of life in the future?
I would tend to think no, it won't be. And the reason why I'm saying that, I mean, say, right, yes, we're seeing this new generation of robots. Great thing about robots is they break and somebody has to fix them. If you look at the current employment spectrum, how often do you see telephonist, bookkeeper, ledger? 20 years ago, there was plenty of jobs around with those titles. So you've got to, each job, if you will, has an evolutionary life cycle. And as such, with that life cycle, some jobs will be there in the present and will go into the future. Some jobs possibly will always be there. I mean, we probably always need undertakers. Other jobs may only last a decade or so. Now, the secret is being able to forecast and predict where the skill sets are going to lie, to identify where they are, and ideally prepare for them rather than retrospectively try and train up for them. I mean, the companies that talk about the skills shortages, they're the ones that perhaps, you know, sort of like didn't identify the skill sets early enough in time to nurture, you know, that body of workers to come through. So yes, there will be plenty of work. It may not be precisely the types of work that we're now familiar with, but unfortunately the only one sure thing in life is change. The problem is we don't like it very much. They say if you like change, you're probably psychotic. But the reality is it's there, okay? And I suppose really then the way the world of work will change to a certain extent, I mean, I think the notion of the permanent lifetime job is more or less being phased out. I think we're going to see more project-type-based work, a lot more chopping and changing. So the more we get used to changing, the more comfortable we're going to be with it. Certainly, as we see a lot of workers at the minute working several part-time jobs, which is an interesting concept because if you have a bad day in one job, you may have a good, better day in another. And so it actually inoculates the individual. Plus, also, you're interacting with a wider range of people. You're adapting and learning more skills in the process. And as far as, say, your employability on your CV is concerned, you know, on paper, then, you'd appear to be someone who's clearly marketing themselves and knows, you know, I suppose, to seek opportunities where they lie. So this idea of, you know, this once expectation that, you know, I mean, here in Arklow, for instance, I mean, it's like once upon a time, you know, you're many people were told, don't even bother with education, you're going down the pottery. And that's where they went. And they're even told, sort of like, that's where you're going to meet your life partners, and that's where you're going to settle down, and, you know, why bother doing anything else? Why even think about doing anything else? But everything has a lifespan attached. And as much as what, you know, some people were left in bereavement when potteries closed and when the fertilizer factories closed and all the other places that have gone down, but out of the ashes arise phoenixes. And with that scenario, it's a case of, you know, if something's burnt to the ground, well, burnt ashes is good fertilizer for the right people who plant the right seeds in the right place, and they'll grow with it. And so really the notion is change and being able to sort of like look on the horizon. I mean, if you think about the statement of, you know, sort of like, you know, don't sit on your laurels, everyone's familiar with it. But if you look at it in the work context, how we've almost like forgotten that, I mean, many people go into a job and they switch off. I mean, even at the current time, some people who sort of like found themselves unemployed, who on the quiet had admitted they were delighted to be let go because the job was so toxic. And, you know, if it wasn't for the fact of sort of like the stigma that they would have experienced if they would have walked out of the position, but the fact they were let go, they're kind of like, they're almost like that's socially acceptable. And that's why some of them actually are delayed in going back to work, because they literally need a few months of respite to literally get their heads back together and then start looking again. So this notion of, you know, the permanent job is the one that I think needs to be questioned. And ask yourselves really at the end of the day, is that actually a good thing? I mean, economically, you're probably actually more likely to increase in your salary by job hopping rather than staying in the same position. I think I remember read one paper once that suggested if you stayed in one job for more than 10 years, statistically, you're likely to be paid less than what your competitor would be on the outside world. So it doesn't actually pay to stick around. Plus, also, you transfer knowledge. I mean, if you look at sort of like evolution, for instance, I mean, it's like, you know, a species becomes strong because you've got mixed genes, DNA. If you think of that in the workplace, if you hire people who sort of like, you know, it's the same people in the same place all the time, you've got one solid, you know, think tank. However, if when it comes to changing, everyone's in the same boat, you all come up with the same ideas. But when there's diversity in the workplace by a gradual transition and moving around, you've got a much richer think tank, much greater problem-solving capability, and a company that can adjust and move into the future.
To that end, there's probably little we can do with 50-year-olds and 60-year-olds, but I'm thinking maybe the education system should start at a young age. How to do this, I don't know. How to phrase this, I don't know. But maybe our education system should start with young people, mentalising them or getting them ready for the fact that life is going to be about job hopping, activity hopping, creating, creativity, imagination. That has to, surely that would have to be channeled and transmitted through the subjects at school. So that seems a big ask with the current system we have.
It is a big ask with the current system that we have. And I think that's the crux of the question. That system is being looked at, is being reviewed, and hopefully they'll have the insight to perhaps to talk more with employer groups and try and feed into the curriculum, you know, the potential seeds for this adaptation and change. Now, saying that, I wouldn't discount your 50s and 60-year-olds. I mean, if you look at the average tenure in employment, you know, being sort of like 3 to 7 years, you take a 50-year-old, he's still got 15 years good life in him. Now, what the interesting thing about the more mature person is as well, is that quite often they have, they're more able to perceive the world in the grey matter rather than the, you know, black and white. There's less what we call dichotomous thinking. So they actually handle sort of like conflict much more easily. They are better negotiators and that sort of thing. Certainly they become good sort of like intermediaries between management and workers. Their actual reliability in the workplace is a little bit higher. Yes, they might take a bit more time through genuine sickness, but they're less likely to sort of like, you know, pull the sickie on the Monday morning. They've proven themselves to be sort of like more than adequate learners. And although a few of them were caught out initially when the IT boom started, a lot of them have caught up. I mean, if you think of back in the late 80s, and it's all right, you know, here's your young, flash software designer driving around in his Porsche. Well, that guy's nearly 50 now. And I'm sure he wouldn't describe himself as being written off. So I think when it boils down to it, the each age, each qualification level, there is a slot, there is a pocket there for that person. And who says they're stuck in where they should be? Okay, everyone has the potential to change. I mean, a friend of mine, I think one of the oldest graduates he had was in his, she was in her early 80s. And that's a person who's gone off and got a degree. So it just goes, you know, give yourself the opportunity, and it's amazing what you can actually achieve. I think the problem is people sort of like create these sort of like, you know, stereotypes for themselves and thinking that, no, they can't, or, but why not? You know, when you actually stop and ask someone, what's actually stopping you? It's like someone at the moment said there's no jobs there. And when you actually investigate each aspect of each barrier that they have, there's actually a rational explanation as to, you know, or an alternative. So why they've become transfixed? And again, it's probably fear. If you've had rejections going for work, okay, which is going to be a part of life, but too many rejections and you stick your head in, back in the shell. You know, why stick your head out and somebody's going to come along and whack you? But what they don't realise is it's not them that's being rejected as such. It's not being rejected as a person. It's just they didn't fit the needs of that company at that time. A lot of recruiters during the Celtic years reported having difficulty finding the right kind of people. They had no trouble recruiting, but finding the right kind of people. And I think this is where now we're in sort of like a buyer's market from the employer's perspective. There's much more concentration going on to this notion of fit. The problem is no one got around to telling the job seeker this. This is the problem. And so a lot of our work here is helping not only sort of like equipping people with the skills, but also training them right. What is contemporary modern managerial theory and I suppose ethos and ideology? You know, because if you don't tell the job seeker, they can't communicate that at interview, and that's really what the employer is waiting to hear. So it's just simply a case of building awareness and then help. I mean, I suppose really you're looking at researching three areas: the self, i.e., the job seeker. What are you selling? Because don't expect an employer to buy until you know what you're selling. The job itself, how it's changed, how it's likely to change, what kind of knowledge do you need previously, what kind of knowledge do you need to learn about in the future, but also the company culture, how that job is done. This is an area which is often least researched.
And thank you, Jerry Dixon.